Businesses in New York say micro-cluster shutdowns are the only way to go.
Without a doubt, it's better than a complete economic shutdown. That is our biggest fear. We don't believe that the small businesses of New York State, the economy of New York State, the local communities that rely on the jobs and local revenue that small businesses create can survive another statewide economic shutdown. We think it would be a catastrophe.
Greg Barella is with the New York chapter of the National Federation of Independent Businesses. He says another shutdown, like the one imposed in the spring, would cause many struggling businesses to close for good. He says there's no immediate aid coming from the federal government, and the Paycheck Protection Program has run out.
Governor Andrew Cuomo says he's not planning any widespread shutdowns, and he says the micro-cluster approach is working. But there are signs that wider shutdowns might be coming. Health officials warned that the upcoming holiday season could greatly increase the spread of the virus, and the areas designated as micro-clusters are steadily growing bigger. This is C19, WSHU's daily news update from the Connecticut and New York region.
Coming up, a transportation system that can keep vaccines at minus 70 degrees, COVID creeps back into Connecticut prisons, and the Senate candidate who isn't old enough to drink. I'm Charles Lane.
I'm Tom Kuser.
And I'm Desiree DiOrio.
A foam board manufacturer in Connecticut has developed a storage system that can transport coronavirus vaccines at temperatures as low as negative 70 degrees Celsius. WSHU's Cassandra Basler reports the design could help get doses to millions of people.
The two early coronavirus vaccines need to be kept at freezing temperatures, Moderna at minus 20 and Pfizer at minus 70 degrees Celsius. Bill Van Horn is sales director at Gilman Brothers Manufacturers. He explains how his company's insulated box insert can keep doses cold for up to 72 hours.
So the vaccine would go inside this inner box, and as it's put into the box, you're going to put this inside this transport system. The dry ice filled out throughout all sides of the box, and then we have an insulated top that goes over the top.
Van Horn says the Army Corps of Engineers approved this design, and the company is not seeking to patent or profit off of it. He says the company alone can make 4,000 storage systems a week. U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut says that can help get the millions of vaccine doses needed across the globe. Cassandra Basler, WSHU News.
A Connecticut prison inmate has died of COVID-19 for the first time since the pandemic was near its peak in the spring. WSHU's Davis Donovan reports.
The 45-year-old inmate at Osborne Correctional Institution was taken to an outside hospital in October and died on Wednesday. He was the first inmate in the state to die of COVID-19 since May 26th. The Connecticut Department of Corrections says it just finished a third round of mass testing of all prison inmates in the state. Just less than 1% tested positive for COVID-19. The state is currently keeping about 20 inmates with COVID-19 at a medical isolation unit in the McDougal Walker Correctional Institution. Davis Donovan, WSHU News.
Coming up, we hear from the 20-year-old who ran for the New York State Senate. But first, these headlines.
The 7-day positive COVID-19 test rate on Long Island has remained roughly the same at 3.2%, which is higher than the rest of the state. The 7-day test rate in Connecticut increased to 5.6%, according to data released by the state. Because of the uptick in Connecticut, in-person learning for about 120 students with special needs in New Haven has been put on hold.
The Metropolitan Transportation Authority says next year could bring drastic service cuts and thousands of layoffs unless the federal government sends help. Next year's budget includes steep cuts to subway service, the LIRR, and Metro North, as much as 50%. That would leave nearly 9,400 MTA workers out of a job. Fare hikes and toll increases are also proposed. The MTA plans to borrow $3 billion. to close this year's budget. Ridership dropped this spring due to the pandemic and is still down about 70% compared to last year.
Suffolk County has started rapid COVID-19 testing in schools. In response to possible outbreaks in the Hampton Bays and Riverhead communities, the county is testing children in elementary school through high school. Officials say they are not seeing any outbreaks in the schools themselves, but rather schools offer a concentrated place to broadly test the community. Riverhead officials have warned about becoming a microcluster that could lead to stricter shutdown rules imposed by the state.
Some members of the youngest vote-eligible generation aren't just filling out ballots, they're also running for local office. Skylar Johnson is one of them. He's 20 years old, from Mount Sinai on Long Island, and he was also a Democratic candidate for the first state Senate district seat. He's also a member of the Brookhaven Democratic Committee in Suffolk County. Mr. Johnson joins us on the phone. Hello, and
hi, how are you doing? Thank you for having me on.
Fine. Thanks very much. You are seeking to replace longtime incumbent Republican Ken LaValle, who is retiring. Why did you decide to run?
So there was a number of reasons why I decided to run for office, but it boils down to a couple key points. I felt that New York wasn't being represented on a number of social issues. It also came down to the fact that I realized we only had representatives coming from one or two groups of people, and we really didn't have anyone from the younger generation stepping up to run. So I wanted to change that.
Just a side note question here. How long have you been interested in politics? How long have you been paying attention to issues like this?
I've kind of always been interested in politics. Something I would always say on the campaign, I would always bring up the fact that when I was 11 years old, I was already arguing for pro-choice rights. I have a memory of being in an art class in sixth grade, and I got into an argument with a young woman in my class that about the right to choose. So this has been something that I've always cared about, and as I've gotten older, I've just gotten more deeply passionate about these issues.
You've answered, at least in part, my next question, which is, how did your peers respond to your campaign?
So my peers were thrilled. People my age were really, really thrilled to see a young person running. I actually pretty much raised the first $1,000 that I actually fundraised on the campaign just from speaking to my friends at school. Over the course of a couple of days, I spoke to people and I started to receive donations of $5, $10, $25. I had a couple of people who said to me, listen, I'm not working right now. I really can't afford to donate, but I'm still going to donate $3. There was a couple of times where I told people, look, if you cannot afford to donate, please do not donate. I'm running to help people, not to take your money. But overall, young people were just really, really happy to see me running. It was amazing because it wasn't just people that I knew personally. As time went on, I saw it across the country. I had 18-year-olds reaching out to me from states like California or Alaska or Texas saying, hey, listen, I just want to let you know that I saw you running and you've inspired me to run for office myself, or you've inspired me to get more involved, or I'm now going to volunteer on a local campaign, or I'm going to volunteer on your campaign. So we had young people from across the nation who wanted to donate and volunteer and were just inspired by seeing a young person running.
You mentioned back a number of years ago when you were in grade school debating with a young classmate on a particular issue. During the campaign, did you interact with people your age, with your peers, who simply didn't agree with you? And did you have a chance to try to convince them? Did they try to convince you to change your mind?
Absolutely. So I had a mixture of views when I spoke to people in the campaign. Most young people that I spoke to were very receptive because, quite frankly, young people know that the system isn't working and they want it to change. The system has never worked for people in my generation, so they want things to change. I did have someone, a former classmate of mine, actually message me on Instagram and ask me more about my views. And he's a registered Republican. He was supporting Donald Trump in the presidential election. He almost never votes for Democrats, but he messaged me and said, hey, look, you're running for office. I just want to know more about your views. And we messaged back and forth for a little bit, and he took what I had to say into consideration. I had people who didn't fully agree with my views, but they liked the basis of what I was saying. Overall, most people in my age group did support my values, because a lot of young people in my age group have very similar values. So it's a myth. You're always see it on the campaign. But overall, I had a net positive feedback from my generation. And when I spoke to people who didn't agree with me, I was more than happy to discuss with them to figure out where we could find middle ground, or at least where we were having a disagreement.
Do you feel that there are political divisions on Long Island that young people can help heal?
Absolutely. So there's a lot of hate over here. We unfortunately have seen that in the last couple of weeks as tension heated up surrounding the presidential race. We had a number of incidents right out by me where we had a large group of Trump supporters going by, and at points they were screaming homophobic slurs. There's been a lot of hate in our area, and what I would like to see is people trying to come together. That's something that's easier said than done, though. Mm. What we really need to focus on is accomplishing things for the general public, is getting things done. Because if we just talk about unity but don't put forward any actual policy, we're not going to get anything done. So yes, I would like to see unity, but my main focus is making sure that we're accomplishing things for the people who have been overlooked all these years.
I think I know the answer to this. Will you run again?
As long as I feel that I can properly represent the people in the district in question, I would run for office again, yes.
What's your advice for young people who want to get involved in politics, maybe haven't stepped into it just yet?
So if you want to get involved in politics but haven't stepped in yet, I would seriously suggest volunteering on a local campaign. I was the campaign manager for a local race before I ran for office. I volunteered in other campaigns before that. I would suggest volunteering, even if you're not like physically going into an office or knocking on people's doors. If you can make phone calls or send text messages or write postcards, that's a stepping stone, because you might get to interact with the candidate and you get to interact with other volunteers who are really, really passionate. So you might learn a little bit about that campaign and about the issues facing your district and your area. I would also suggest, again, as I said before, joining your local civic organization, because the civics are the base level, are basically the base level of government. And they involve the issues on the most local level possible, because they only involve your town. So I would suggest joining your civic, and I would suggest volunteering on the campaign, because you might be able to learn a lot about your area before you step into a higher role in politics.
Mr. Johnson, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me on.
Skylar Johnson is a 20-year-old member of the Brookhaven Democratic Committee in Suffolk County.
For the latest news from Long Island and Connecticut, you can listen on the radio or online at WSHU.org.
If you're into podcasts, WSHU has several, including Off the Path, which explores the obscure oddities on the road between Boston and New York City. Find it on our WSHU podcast page. I'm Desiree DiOrio.
And I'm Charles Lane. We'll be back tomorrow.